all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, March 9th. Coming up, a very busy hour ahead with five different guests throughout the hour here. And the theme, by and large, is putting families first. Later on in our hometown health segment, we're going to talk to Dr. Kristen Lyerly. She'll introduce us to a group helping people navigate their infertility concerns and ways to help couples get better connections to the resources they need to start a family. We'll also be hearing later from weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo, Luke Mathers in our Civic Media homeroom. Tomorrow, Wendy Strout from the Human Rights Campaign on the extreme importance of the state Supreme Court race to Wisconsin's LGBTQ community and basic human rights overall. Tomorrow, we'll also hear from Courier National correspondent Kia Vakil, who will introduce us to Leonard Leo. Who's Leonard Leo? The guy who almost single-handedly helped overturn Roe v. Wade by becoming Donald Trump's justice whisperer, and he's now trying to impact the state Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin. But before all of that, later today, State Representatives Christina Shelton and Francesca Hong will be reintroducing their Economic Justice Bill of Rights. It's a proposal that is, frankly, just it's a values statement, and it's a value statement that honestly shouldn't have any kind of partisan label on it. It does, unfortunately. And that's too bad because it's been introduced. This will be the third time through, but it needs repeating every year, this statement of values. And so we're pleased to have Representative Shelton here with us to tell us a bit more about it. Representative Shelton, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And I hope we may be hearing from Representative Hong during this coming half hour as well. But we really appreciate you coming in to talk about this before the press conference. So let's start with the quick oversight of what is an Economic Justice Bill of Rights, especially at the state level here in Wisconsin.
Well, I'll give you a quick backstory, which I think is really important. This is the third year that we are introducing this project. Every year it's changed and shifted a little bit due to the input from our partners. This project started when Representative Hong and I were campaigning back in the fall of 2020. And what we were hearing from people at the doors was a desire for Democrats to be stronger around economic security, to really have a framework and a platform and a plan for how we're going to build back freedoms and secure freedoms for working families, small businesses, farmers and growers, and our most marginalized. And we started talking with some folks who had been working on this with Senator Bernie Sanders and building on FDR's Economic Bill of Rights during World War II. And so we started putting this plan together. It was introduced in March of 2021. It was the first bill we put out in our freshman term. And every year we recommit to it in March with our partners. We have 22 partners coming to the state today. We're going to be talking about these value statements and these commitments. They're non-negotiables. And then we're going to go across the street and have lunch with one another and get to know each other, because really this project comes through relationship building, coalition building, and really making sure we stand in solidarity with one another.
All right. So we've got the overall concepts. Let's look at the specifics then, as they're spelled out in that proposed joint resolution. Let's go through some of those points. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think the most important thing here is the overall. And as FDR said, true freedom cannot exist without economic security and independence. So as you're looking at these rights, you know, basically what we're saying is, you know, you aren't free if you don't have a living wage job, right? You aren't free and you can't access freedom or live in freedom if you don't have a fully funded public education or access to a union or good health care, right? If you are unable to get the health care you need due to a miscarriage or needing an abortion, or maybe you have a trans child, then you aren't free. So it centers freedom and rights, but then clearly outlines our commitments to say these are non-negotiables, and everything we do both legislatively and in community must align with these commitments.
Yeah, I mean, you see that it includes, like it says, life, self-determination, and liberation, regardless of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic background, sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, disability status, and age. And the funny thing is, Representative, I can already hear the howls of, oh, there they go again, practicing identity politics and being all woke. When again, identity politics and woke is simply a short way of don't be a bigot, don't be a racist, don't discriminate on the basis of these things. That's not politics. That's human rights, it would seem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, our differences are what make us strong, and our differences are what unite us in our fight for each other and in radical solidarity of one another, and to learn and understand how the world and our country and our state, you know, treats us differently. And so I think in those differences and in our identities, we can find that radical solidarity and really fight here, right? That's what we're fighting for, is for the American promise. It's what has been outlined and promised to us, you know, whether, you know, we're newly arrived, whether we're heirs and we're native born, whether we immigrated here, that we all have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this has to come from our collective struggle to work together to, you know, activate and actualize these rights that we've outlined in this resolution.
Yeah, and those things include affordable and accessible, high-quality health care, which, again, the United States is such an outlier in the way that we have our health care structured, that health care is not affordable for so many people. And another one of the gimmies, pollution-free water and a healthy planet. You know, these things are not... This is not brain surgery, folks. We're going to talk more about this with Representative Christina Shelton on the other side of this break. And we'll also get a check update on the winter storm heading our way from weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo. That's all coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
Have a dollar. In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the Economic Justice Bill of Rights with Representative Christina Shelton. But first, we have winter weather returning because it's still winter. And folks, especially in the southern half of the state, ought to be paying attention to what's going to start moving through later today. And to tell us more about that and the forecast all around Wisconsin, we're joined by weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo. Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you, and yes, especially by this afternoon across western portions of the state, we'll start to see that accumulating snowfall starting up, so persons driving along that I-90 and 94 corridor by this afternoon can expect around an inch or two of snow accumulation already by the end of the day. We do have those winter storm warnings in effect, including areas like Black River Falls down to near Wisconsin Dells and including Richland Center. Also another pocket of some winter storm warnings along the Lake Michigan shoreline, as we'll see a little bit of some lake enhancement to that snow by tonight. Coming up for the rest of southern Wisconsin, winter weather advisories that start up by this evening. Coming up as we'll start to see that snow again working into western Wisconsin by this afternoon, then overspreading much of the state by tonight. By the time all is said and done, looking at snow accumulations for Wausau over to near Park Falls and points off to the north from there in that 2 to 4 inch range. But once your travels do take you in areas to the south of about an Eau Claire to Green Bay line, that's where we'll see the 4 to 7 inch widespread snow accumulations, and could even see some 6 to 9 inch totals in areas like Milwaukee over to near Waukesha, with a little bit of some lake enhancement off of Lake Michigan with some breezy east to northeast winds. Tonight, that snow continuing throughout much of the state. Those overnight low temperatures for tonight looking to drop back into the 20s pretty much for all the state, but sticking closer to the lower 30s right along the Lake Michigan shoreline. By the time we get to your Friday, still some lingering accumulations of snow for eastern portions of Wisconsin, but even there, looking to gradually taper off by Friday afternoon as that storm system exits on off to the east. 30s for high temperatures statewide, lower 30s for northern Wisconsin, with some mid-30s expected across the south. And then we get a brief break in the action of the snow there for Friday night, but yet another area of low pressure looks to work in from the northwest into the day on Saturday, looking to bring some possibly more plowable snow amounts by Saturday afternoon into Saturday night and even lingering into the day on Sunday. Still some uncertainty as to the exact the snowfall amounts there, but some plowable snow not out of the question for the weekend. Saturday still a touch below average temperature-wise, lower 30s for highs across the northern half of the state with mid-30s south. And into the day on Sunday, pretty comparable temperature-wise once again. Those lower 30s for areas like Wausau, over to near Baldwin and Eau Claire, but more like the mid-30s for Madison and Milwaukee.
It's really just, Michael, your way of saying that if you still have a little gas left in the snowblower, it'll get used up. Don't worry that it's going to sit there all summer. Still a little bit of work to do on the driveways yet, it sounds like.
Yeah, winter is still in full swing here through at least the middle part of this month. We'll still see a couple of rounds of snow to get through, maybe towards the latter part of next week, even another round of some wintry-type precipitation. So, yeah, keep those snow blowers in tip-top shape here.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You too.
Weatherology meteorologist Michael Carroll. We are back now with State Representative Christina Shelton, and she is talking to us about the Economic Justice Bill of Rights that she is proposing, along with State Representative Francesca Hong. And Representative Shelton, we were just going through some of the points about it, and I was making the point that things like pollution-free water really shouldn't be debatable. And yet, as you've seen, even after the governor and the assembly speaker both declared a year of clean water a couple of years back, there still seems to be disagreement on what to do and how much to pay toward it.
Well, I think what you're exactly right. And what we see, right, is a disagreement on the role of government here in upholding these rights and ensuring that people have things like clean water, healthcare, housing, good jobs, and fully funded public schools. And what you're seeing is Wisconsin Republicans sort of walking away. I mean, not sort of, absolutely walking away from their duty to the Wisconsin people. You know, we cannot rely on the free market corporations and billionaires to save us here and to ensure that, you know, we have things like clean water. You know, you look at corporations, their job overwhelmingly is to make profits for their shareholders and to make money on the backs of workers. And so it is important and critical that the state government, the federal government, local government serve people by upholding these rights because we play a significant role in expanding freedoms for all. And so that's the difference. We're going to continue to fight like hell, whether it's legislatively or through organizing. But to me, that's the clear difference on the style of leadership. Some of us believe we have a job to do and others don't.
Well, you note in part in the whereas parts of the resolution, you note that this legislative body is the most diverse legislative body in Wisconsin history with unprecedented representation. And while it might be a little more diverse on one side of the aisle than the other, the fact of the matter is this is a legislative body that should be proud of all the different groups it represents, all the different areas of the state, and that there should be more opportunities to come together on these issues and again, stand up for people in Wisconsin. So you mentioned you're going to introduce this today. You're going to be talking a bit about it today. Where's your hope that it goes from here? Is it that you want people to reach out to their own representatives and senators and express support for this? Or, you know, where do you go from here? Are you still with us?
Well, we're going to continue in the building to talk to our Democratic colleagues and ensure that people are signing. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Pat?
Yep, here you just fine.
Okay, sorry about that. That's I'm in a hotel in Madison, so thanks. Okay, we're going to work in the building to ensure our colleagues, Republican and Democrat, actually understand the value of this resolution and encourage them to sign on. I'm excited to report that all of our freshman Democratic colleagues have already signed on to this resolution. They'll be on the co-sponsorship memo when it's emailed out today. So we have the freshman coalition behind us. But out in community is really where we put this document to work. We're asking our organizers, our nonprofits, our local leaders, our local electeds like school boards and city councils to look at this document and see what role that they play in making sure that what they do aligns with the progressive values of Wisconsin. We all need to be moving in the same direction. And so we're going to continue building that multiracial, multigenerational generational coalition that we've been building over the past 3 years.
You know, it would be really easy for a guy like me to take shots. And I guess I will in asking the question that it doesn't say anything in here about lowering taxes and slashing regulations and running government like a business. So it might be tough to get Republican sponsorship in this. But I want to be fair and note that the Republican Party once had a history of being, you know, pro-conservation. And we even talked about Tom Tiffany earlier chairing this subcommittee on federal lands. And while his title for his report was called Conservation with a Purpose, and I think we understand what kind of purpose he's talking about, there are Republicans who clearly don't want to, you know, put a put a mine in every state park or something like that. But, you know, again, getting them to follow through on the commitment is probably tougher than it's ever been for the Republican Party.
Yeah, look, and I don't think that overwhelmingly there are, I think there are Republicans that don't, you know, want to deny health care to, you know, transgender people and parents with transgender children. I think there are Republicans that absolutely, we know this, understand that women need to have access to life-saving abortion care. So what we see here are electeds that are a function coming from two really important pieces that I know you talk about a lot, Pat, which is one, gerrymandering. When we have these folks in these districts that are so heavily packed in for one particular party, the Republicans, we can't hold them accountable, right? And then the second piece to this is money in politics. We need to, at the federal level and Citizens United, we need to get money out of politics. I would love to see publicly funded campaigns where people do not have to fundraise and be beholden to donors. And we have to change the political system so that people absolutely and actually represent the will of the people.
All right, let's take a couple of minutes here talking with State Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay about some other matters that you're working on in the legislature, and one that you and I have talked about previously, and I'm curious as to any movement on it, is about making sure that school meals, lunches and breakfasts, you know, are affordable, and so that kids shouldn't go hungry. It, again, doesn't make any sense that you wouldn't do this, and you've been a leader on that. And what can you tell us about what's happening so far this session?
Well, Pat, you know this is my favorite thing to talk about, so thanks for giving me an opportunity. I have to start off by saying happy National School Breakfast Week. We kicked off this week with our Healthy School Meals for All Coalition on Monday with a press conference with Superintendent Jill Underley talking about school meals. We have been working on feeding all kids a free breakfast and a free lunch in all schools for the past year and a half. The governor put it in his budget. We were thrilled, $120.2 million to provide free breakfast and free lunch starting next school year. The coalition right now is working and intensely to organize and be prepared for those JFC hearings. We're going to be sending parents, food service workers, teachers, everyone you can think of to those hearings to make sure that we keep this provision in the budget. It is absolutely foundational to students' learning achievement, local economies, farmers and growers. It's a great issue, and we're going to make sure it stays in. I actually think we have a chance here, which is really exciting.
Speaking of writing that budget and the Joint Finance Committee, which is, of course, Republican controlled, they announced this week the listening sessions that will be held. The first one starts the day after the April elections. It'll be April 5th in Waukesha, followed by April 11th in Eau Claire, then April 12th in Wisconsin Dells, and finally April 26th in Minocqua. And Representative Shelton, I know this isn't your doing, it's the folks across the aisle, but it seems like roughly the five or six most populous areas of the state are not getting the Joint Finance Committee to stop in there. There seems to be an issue taking input from some of those areas that might be more blue than red, it seems to me.
Yeah, I heard directly from constituents who are outraged by this. Look, we understand that JFC, these hearings can't come to every community, you know, and directly in our community. We understand that we have to travel and do some organizing here, but to not have anything in the Fox Valley is such a slap in the face of the people who live in that densely populated area. And, you know, to not listen to those folks and understand the regional aspects of how the budget impacts people, economies, and small businesses, it's not great. We're going to work with the system that we have, but people are unhappy about it, and they have the right to feel that way.
Yeah. Now, there are ways, for those folks watching the live video feed on Facebook, I just put up the web address where you can put in a public comment. There is a public comment form, but of course it's a little tough for me to explain on the radio that you just got to go to legis.wisconsin.gov/topics/budget-comments/submit-comment. But I'm sure we'll find a shortcut and a way to get it up there. There are ways to get your input in. And, you know, again, frankly, just reaching out to your own hometown legislator and telling them your priorities is key. I've got a feeling folks know to find you. You're accessible in the Green Bay area.
anytime, any place, I'll meet with anyone, have coffee, talk about anything you like. It's the best part of my job.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So again, we will be looking for that Economic Justice Bill of Rights announcement coming out later today, and hoping to meet with you and Francesca Hong another time for continued legislative updates. Christina, thank you very, very much for visiting with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. All right. When we come back, it will be time for Hometown Health, our regular Thursday segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And we will be talking about infertility care and getting access to the resources that couples need. Now, whatever income bracket they come from, they have needs too. So that'll happen in just a couple of minutes. Stick with us. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. It's a Thursday morning. This is Up North News Radio, and it's time, as always, on Thursdays for Hometown Health, where we tend to... Oh, look at what Kristen did. Kristen Lyerly has been in Washington, D.C. lately, and we still have her titled on the video feed as Up North News Radio White House Correspondent. But you are not at the White House anymore. You made it back home from D.C. late last night, didn't you?
We can replace that with my standard chief morale officer title.
There you go. Which can only work if you're caffeinated, and that's you appear to be getting yourself caffeinated as we speak.
I am at Kavarna Coffee House in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay. Look, we're going to get to Sarah Finger in just a minute here and talk about infertility issues, but I would be remiss if I didn't follow up on something we've mentioned a couple of times, and that was your social media post about Republican members of Congress essentially censoring OBGYNs who are in town for visits with their lawmakers. We'll talk more in depth maybe next Monday about this, but I did want to at least get the overview. Did the discussion seem at all fruitful, or did that specter of threats and censorship kind of, you know, hold sway over your visits?
It was really, really tricky. You know, for me personally, so we were advised not to talk about abortion in the offices of our Republican congressional members. And for me personally, that just seems so crazy because we're OBGYNs and everybody's thinking about it. So I did have those conversations with staffers in Glenn Grothman's office and Mike Gallagher's office, and they weren't deep. And we didn't change any minds, but we answered some questions and we had some respectful conversations. So for me personally, I had a good experience. Some of my colleagues did not, and we can talk more about that on Monday.
We most certainly will. All right, Kristen, tell us more about Sarah and today's topic in Hometown Health.
There's so much to say about the amazing Sarah Finger, but she is here with us today to talk about an incredible coalition that she's involved with, the Building Families Alliance Wisconsin. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much. This is so fantastic to be with you both today.
So I guess we should start out by talking about what exactly is the Building Families Alliance Coalition here in Wisconsin, and who is part of it?
Sure. So I'm actually the founder of the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health. We've been around for the last 19 years, and we've been monitoring policy threats and opportunities related to women's health, safety, and economic security. And as you can imagine, we run the full gamut. There are many different issues that make or break us as women. And so a few years back, one of supporters that had been involved in Resolve's National Day of Action around getting infertility treatment coverage nationally had come to me and said, Sarah, this seems like something the Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health might want to get involved with. And of course, I did. It was something very personal to me and personal to my family. I only had to wait 1 year, and it was a devastating year trying to get pregnant after waiting my whole life to be a mom. So automatically, when someone invited me to be part of an effort to try and get statewide legislation here in the state to cover infertility treatment and fertility preservation, I was all in. So for the last couple of years, I've been on the steering committee of the Building Families Alliance, which started out as a group of physicians and advocates and patients who, again, were really called by this very common issue that we're dealing with, and such a sensitive emotional issue in terms of wanting to build our families. And so we went from having a small group of us create the Building Families Alliance to now having over 500 individuals connected with us since the introduction of legislation last session in Wisconsin.
That's crazy. That's huge.
Yeah, I am in my whole history, that's why I put in the 19 years, never in my history of working as a women's health advocate have I seen the kind of response we did when we introduced the fact that this could be possible in Wisconsin, and over the 172,000 Wisconsinites who, and that's underreported, who are really agonizing with infertility right now. I could not believe, again, how many people immediately responded and wanted to get involved. But even more so, Kristen, is that the fact that they're from every single Senate district in this state. So those 500 plus people that came together in a really short amount of time to say, I want to be a part of this movement so that anyone who wants to build a family in Wisconsin can without the financial and emotional burden. And we started looking at the numbers and we're like, this is every corner of this state is speaking out and saying, you know, infertility impacts us and we can do something different about this.
I want to really highlight a couple things that you said there. 172,000 Wisconsinites experience infertility. That's like one in eight Wisconsinites. We either are those people or we know those people. This is a problem that affects all of us.
You know, and this is a pro-family issue. And, you know, you were just talking about abortion and what, you know, the conversation that's been happening for almost a year now around reproductive justice. And as someone that's worked on reproductive rights and justice over the last couple decades, you know, this is another a really critical reproductive justice issue where it's not just, you know, a matter when it comes to having a choice, it's also a choice when and how and, you know, to have a family. And this just breaks my heart because we know that, again, the 172,000, we know that this is dramatically hitting populations of color, populations of those LGBTQ identifying. And it's just, again, it's heartbreaking to think that in a state where we have leadership that, you know, really clings to pro-family work, that we're not doing more to help any Wisconsinite who is looking for that dream of building a family to do so without that financial and emotional burden. And it doesn't have to be this way, Kristen. There are 20 states who have passed legislation, including Louisiana, Texas, and West Virginia. So there are states that have that have put in place the kind of protections, again, not only for infertility treatment coverage, but fertility preservation for those who have gone through cancer and have survived cancer. And so this is just, this is something that we're really excited to raise awareness about and to remind Wisconsinites it doesn't have to be this way. And if we look to the border of Illinois, you know, you don't have this same situation where, again, you don't have an issue of privilege. You have 65 IVF clinics in Illinois because they insist on having equitable coverage for infertility treatment and fertility preservation.
The Building Families Alliance homepage, which is buildingfamilieswi.org, puts it so succinctly, just in three parts. Part one is what you just heard, over 172,000 Wisconsinites experience infertility. Second is that many can't afford the out-of-pocket costs to cover fertility treatments. And then three, together we can change that. You mentioned the states that are doing this already. What kind of, do they all vary? What kind of model legislation would you like to see introduced and passed in Wisconsin that would change the current situation?
That's a great point. So, of course, you know, you see state legislation, it's not all ideal, but we have model legislation from Resolve, the national organization that works on these issues. And we had introduced the model legislation last legislative session in which Senator Kelda Royce from Madison and Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire had both signed on as authors. And so the legislation we have not only covers infertility treatment. So it says, you know, if you have insurance that you should be offered this coverage for infertility treatment and for fertility preservation. And so we have model legislation, which is referred to as the Building Families Act, Pat. And while we are definitely primed to introduce that legislation this year, we are pleasantly surprised and happy to report that Governor Evers has actually put the same language in that standalone piece of legislation in the state budget. So similar to Representative Shelton, who was just on, we're watching those hearings, we're watching the opportunities to speak out to the Joint Finance Committee and to state legislators all across the state where all of these individuals who are engaging in this issue are from. And we're asking people to speak out and let their legislators know that we want to keep this provision in the state budget that says we're going to cover infertility treatment and fertility preservation.
So if I'm listening right now and this means something to me, I want to get involved, what can I do?
The first things first, connect to the Building Families Alliance. Pat had shared the website. There it is. Thank you. And connect to us on social media. Connect to us. Sign up and let us know how we can kind of customize your experience working with the Building Families Alliance. We know there's some people that want to tell stories. We want to know there's some people that want to contact our legislators and get more involved in advocacy. We know it's not always easy to be dealing with such a personal and difficult issue and then find the time and energy and emotion to be an advocate. So wherever you are in your journey around fertility and infertility, our organization, we're really primed right now and ready to meet you where you're at and to find ways that you can meaningfully engage, raise awareness, and advocate for what we know to be a very effective policy, whether in the state budget or state legislature.
And let's put it from a policy perspective. You have the American Medical Association, the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the World Health Organization, all recognizing that infertility is a disease. And as you noted, millions of Wisconsinites, they pay premiums for their insurance coverage. And yet in some states like Wisconsin, despite paying those premiums, insurers are not required to cover standard of care for infertility patients or cancer patients or others at risk of medically induced infertility. So it's not for those that say, well, you know, is this an extra benefit or an entitlement? As I've said repeatedly for, God, decades now, we're paying the insurance companies. We are paying premiums. We want the coverage that we should expect to get for those premiums.
You know, and I just have to bring it back to the fact that we know this is an economic issue. So in terms of like worker satisfaction, worker payment in people leaving the state for a number of reasons. We know we have a hostile state in a lot of different areas, but around this issue, you have a lot of people that are willing to pick up and leave and go to other states that have this kind of coverage and take their funding, their money and their workforce to another state. And we need to figure out how to retain people here in Wisconsin. And you're absolutely right. We're paying our premiums. And study after study shows in these 20 states where they've offered this kind of coverage, it is actually helping employers and the bottom line and all of that more than the idea that this is a huge burden on anybody insuring or anybody employing individuals. And so we know this is a win-win. This is a win-win for employers, win-win for the economy, win-win for healthcare. I mean, you definitely get safer health outcomes when you have coverage versus the desperation of you have saved up, you know, $20,000, $30,000. And again, the debt and the emotional toll, it's just, we need to take that off the table and again, be able to give parity. So people who again, have that dream of building a family, can do so. And with the support again of their employers, insurers and communities.
Dr. Lyerly, we've got about a minute left. So from a physician and OBGYN standpoint, can you make the case for this bill?
100%. This is healthcare. This is what women's healthcare is about. And this is a win not only for patients and families, but this is a win for our legislators who believe in families, who believe in healthy babies. This is a real opportunity to engage and make some real meaningful change on behalf of families right here in Wisconsin. So that's a challenge to you, legislators. Let's do this.
Again, it's about, as we introduced the hour, it's about putting families first, whether you're talking an economic justice bill of rights or this type of coverage for infertility. You can't make the case about being, you know, quote unquote, pro-life and pro-family if you're not actually willing to, you know, to walk the walk, as well as talk. And so, Sarah, that's where we're so thankful to have your advocacy, your willingness to come on and talk about it today. We wish you all the best, and thanks for appearing with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it was our great pleasure. And Kristen, I know that you just are back from D.C., so we're going to talk on Monday a bit more about your travels there. So you have a wonderful weekend, and you know, enjoy it, because I'm expecting you to come in basically loaded for bear on Monday. I don't want you holding back.
I'm so ready. I've got stories.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
You. Have a great morning.
Yeah. We'll talk to Luke Mathers right after this break. You're up north. I got to tell you, I hear the Madison local station in my headphones as we're coming out of commercial break. I'm not hearing Wausau or Richland Center or whatnot. And the Madison forecast from Weatherology calls for 5 to 10 inches there. We're going to ask Todd Alba about that, that feeling of dread of what Mother Nature's dumping on us next. But first, there was one call from our last segment on the state Supreme Court. Stephen's calling in from Green Bay. Stephen, thanks for hanging in there. What's on your mind?
Hey, Pat. I just, you know, wanted to make a couple of comments regarding the Supreme Court race.
Sure.
I was just actually at my sister-in-law's house last night, and I asked them, I said, hey, do you know anything about the candidates that are going to be going up in the Supreme Court race? And they knew nothing. So I took some time to educate them on both Kelly and Protasewicz. And I think it's just important for us as voters to really, you know, do whatever you can do. If there's family members like, you know, I had who don't know about the Supreme Court race, to talk to them. I think it's important to make sure that they really understand the stark differences between the two candidates and the issues that they're running on. Or, you know, if you can put a yard sign in your yard so when people drive by your yard, they can see, you know, who you support. The two candidates in this Supreme Court race, I don't know if in my lifetime I've ever seen such a stark and drastic difference between the two candidates. And it's really, do we want someone on our Supreme Court that is going to bring the values of most of the populace in the state of Wisconsin with them? Or do we want someone who exercised in basically fascism, taking that power and trying to rule from our Supreme Court off the bench?
Okay, so that's exactly the kind of points that have got to be made to friends and family, Stephen. And I can't thank you enough for synthesizing that so well for the listeners. And that, again, it should encourage more people to talk to their neighbors, not assume that they're going to go vote. So, Stephen, I appreciate those points. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
all right, let's turn to one Todd Alba from the ever so conveniently named Todd Alba Show, and find out what the heck he's. I don't know how you did that. How did you get a show that? I don't get that.
I suggested it not be called that. One of the leading candidates I had was the Redemption Tour with Todd Alba. I thought that would be appropriate.
See, now I thought that would be nice. Yeah,
yeah. But our boss Crudy said no. Just make it the Todd Alba Show. He says I wish. Actually, a little insight. He said he wished that he would have named Devil's Advocate Crudy and Dom. So that was so. I don't know. So I said, "You're the boss. So I'll do what you want."
Okay. I mean, look, if they want names on here, if we want to go with, Zomers and Alba, it flows right off the tongue.
Right?
I mean, wouldn't
exactly.
Zomers get first billing?
Well, you could do A to Z, all ball to Zomers.
That's true. That you could do that.
Oh. Or Z to A.
You caved so fast on that, Aaron. I mean, Aaron's giving you top billing, and you're ready. Oh, we could go alphabetical. You've been alphabetical at the back end all your life.
Yeah,
and
but
you had
then,
a chance to stand up for yourself.
But that's catchy. And my name is already A to Z. It's already alphabetical on its own, too.
That's true. Aaron Zomers, see?
Oh, hey.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Alba and Zomers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know.
It works. You have... you have, again, a star-studded lineup of folks.
We're very fortunate. Let me tell you how this happened. Normally, we have Trygve Olsen, who is one of the senior advisors to the Lincoln Project, and he's a fine guest in his own right. We love to have him every Wednesday. Grew up in Wisconsin, went on to do great things nationally, internationally, and he comes on our little program every Wednesday, and we appreciate it. He is flying today. He's traveling. And so he got the other co-founder, one of the other co-founders of the Lincoln Project, Reed Galen, to fill in for him. I was excited to have that. And then Reed came up ill last night. He said, I can't do the whole hour. So he and his wonderful assistant reached out and got Stuart Stevens to be on our show, a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. And Pat, you probably have this as well. I mean, you've been in the news business a lot longer than I was, and much more successful, by the way. But you have those guests that you're like, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could just talk to this person, right? Like, geez, I'd love to find a way to get that person. And this is the book right here. It was all a lie, how the Republican Party became Donald Trump. I read this during COVID, during the pandemic, during lockdown. Pat, it was like going to therapy. Because it was, let me just read you the opening line. I mean, can you imagine a Republican saying this today? I mean, here, if you want to write a book, folks, here's how you do it. I have no one to blame but myself. I believed. That's where it all started to go wrong. I was drawn into a party that espoused a core set of values. And it goes on to say, what a fool I was. I mean, that is a redemption tour right there. I mean, what a way to start a book. I mean, it just draws you in. And I read this, and I think you, as someone who spent, you know, a lot of your life in politics and observing politics, you know, you turns out you chose the right side. But I think that for those of us who, and I'm not trying to paint with a completely broad brush. You and I both know there are Republicans out there who have done good things. And the party.
And again, not to interrupt your train of thought, but believe me, I've told a couple of stories of things that I wish I would have been more forceful or said differently. And said to some of my own party members, how many times I've said, and again, jokingly, folks, jokingly, right. I said, there are some Democrats I'd sooner push in front of a bus than some Republicans I know. Only because, and you know, you probably know some of the people I'm talking about in that Capitol building will do that over a beer. But, you know, again, we don't want to paint with a broad brush, but it is right now the Republican Party that is so very publicly wrestling with itself.
Yeah, it is. For me, it was super cathartic because a lot of the things that Stuart talks about in his book are things that I saw in my career. And when you get after 25, 30 years, you look back and you say, yeah, I helped a couple of good people. I'm proud of that. But I was part of a movement that I maybe didn't realize or I didn't want to recognize at the time. And then to step back in your 50s or 60s and say, holy crap, what the heck was I doing? I mean, it's powerful. And Stuart wrote about this in his book. We're going to have him on at 8:15 for the 8 o'clock hour. So I cannot wait. Pull up I wish I just had a glass of whiskey or a nice bottle or a nice glass of Cabernet, because that's usually what I drank reading this book.
Wow. Okay, so I'm going to want to listen back to the show as a podcast through civicmedia.us and then pull up that episode in the evening as I pour that first little tumbler of Knob Creek.
Exactly.
Okay, I shouldn't say
that's
tumbler.
That's a good one.
What's that, Aaron?
Knob Creek is my whiskey of choice as well.
I knew I liked this kid. Wow.
He's fantastic.
He's good. I know. He really is. I'm telling you, maybe ever, front billing.
Ever try a Pendleton whiskey, a Canadian?
I have. Yeah, that's pretty good, too. It's a lot more of a gentle flavor, I guess.
Smooth. Very smooth.
Look at this. When did this become whiskey talk all of a sudden with Zomers and Alba? This is crazy.
We just need to bring in Kristen Bry. She's another whiskey aficionado.
Let's do that sometime.
Maybe at our host training next Wednesday.
No, I'm going to miss that.
Pat.
I'm going to be. I know I had a previously planned thing, so I know.
All right,
we'll work it out. Hey, speaking of people you love to get as a guest, and I've had these guests before, but I'm really excited tomorrow. Representatives Francesca Hong and Christina Shelton.
See, Francesca is on my list. You got her before I did. God bless you.
Oh,
I was on your show before.
So happy the first time that I got her booked on here. And tomorrow she and Christina Shelton are going to talk about reintroducing the Economic Justice Bill of Rights. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Let's talk about it in 5 minutes of my show, Pat.
Why don't we? I'll go pour a glass of milk because it's 8 o'clock in the morning and we'll carry on from there.
Sounds great.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd. All right. Talk to you on your show in just a minute on several of these Civic Media radio stations. Whether you're going to that show or elsewhere, we appreciate you joining us on this Wednesday morning. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.